Welcome to the Interagency Board Podcast. The Interagency Board can be found at interagencyboard.org. Welcome to the Interagency Podcast. I'm Dave Donahue, and together today we have three distinguished individuals. We have Tyler Hoke. Tyler Hoke is a senior firefighter and hazmat specialist with the Greensboro Fire Department. He holds a degree in chemistry from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Worked in the chemical industry. Currently, he's with the Greensboro Hazmat Team in the North Carolina Regional Response Team Number 5. He's also an active instructor with the Meter Guys, the National Fire Academy, and the IAFF. Scott Russell is a 30-year captain with the Baltimore Fire Department and is a member of the NFPA 470 and 475 Committee. He collaborates on research and development task groups, vetting the next generation of hazmat PPE and equipment. He also instructs for the IAFF. He retired from the Air Force after 27 years, retiring as Lieutenant Colonel with the Delaware Air National Guard's 142nd Aeromedical Evacuation Squadron, performing evacuation of wounded. He deployed 9 times in support of 4 different overseas contingencies. He also executed disaster emergency management planning with the Air National Guard, specializing in hurricane evacuation and disaster response. His education consists of an associate's degree in emergency medical services, a bachelor's in nursing, and a master's degree in disaster and emergency management. Dave Matthews has been involved with hazard materials response since 1987 and has strived to understand and then explain the complexities of hazmat WMD technologies to first responders. He's worked with the best of the best within the community of interest, offering a practitioner perspective in this pursuit of science behind the technologies. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Thank you for having us.
All right. Today we're going to be talking about 4 gas meters, and you guys are 3 of the best when it comes to metering technology. Why is mastery of 4 gas metering so important for emergency responders?
Ooh. Big one, huh? Big right out of the gate.
Start right out the gate, yeah.
I'll jump in and say this is it's foundational to any hazmat team. You can't be a hazmat team without having the ability to identify IDLH atmospheres, flammable atmospheres being IDLH for all responders because there's no PPE to protect you from it. So not only do you have to have what they call 4 gas meters, that 4 gas meter really has to have the ability to detect LEL atmosphere or lower explosive limit atmospheres.
Yeah,
Tyler.
I agree with Dave that ultimately everything that we're doing with air monitoring, it at least initially, it's going to center around that first tactical priority of life safety, whether it be our responder safety or whether it be the safety of the residents that are in a building that may be filled with gas or CO or something like that. That's ultimately what it comes down to. And air monitoring allows us to be able to see those hazards that are unseen, right? It's easy for us as firefighters or as cops or whatever, it's easy for us to hear gunshots or see fire or whatever. It's another thing when you have an invisible gas that may be odorless too, that people are breathing and next thing you know, they're starting to go unconscious, have dizziness, potential death. I think that's the crux of it all is life safety.
I would have to, you guys got it right on the money there. I'm going to go even farther with this because we tend to say the word hazmat all the time when we talk about metering. And I'm a big believer in the foundation to become a hazmat tech is being a firefighter or first responder first, and then you get to that tech level. But mastering 4 gas is really important, especially the LEL. And I always say this, and people look at me like I'm crazy. What tool on your fire engine is used the most? When I pose that question to people, and they look at me funny. Well, my fire hose. I'm like, is it really? Do you really pull your fire hose off every call? I will tell you, you probably pull your meter off of your engine more than any other piece of equipment on that fire engine, maybe except for your irons. And people look at me like, wow. So I always say it's the tool that's used the most and trained the least. And it puts us in a really bad situation. Reading line of duty deaths tells you that every day.
Absolutely.
So it involves primarily a responder's health and safety is the big key takeaway for why we should be focusing on 4 gas meters. Consensus on that, I'm hearing?
I would say so.
I'll go a little bit farther and say this is that you're not meeting the standard of care if you're not getting a detector that can tell you 10% of the LAL. Right. Because that is IDLH according to NIOSH.
Yep.
And that means I got to rule it out or I can't operate in that environment. So it's much more than just responder safety. It's also just meeting the standard of care. You cannot say they're in a safe atmosphere unless you're monitoring that atmosphere. When you got indicators, there might be a hazard material involved.
Okay. And Scott, you had mentioned it's an unused tool or untrained tool.
Highly untrained. People argue that fact with me, and I can sit down and have that discussion because I'm very fact oriented. Just looking at the 470, NFPA 470, and what's required, like hazmat ops, for instance, when you take hazmat ops, meter training is not required, right? That's a mission specific standard that a lot of jurisdictions don't follow because it costs money to go an extra day of class when hazmat ops. So they don't do that. But yet that meter will be sitting on that fire engine that day or that, you know, when there's equipment or it's sitting in a chief's car, for God's sake, sometimes. It's just like, you know, I talk to units and Tyler will let you know, and we teach all over the country. It's amazing how many units go first in on a gas call using their nose. And you just sit there and shake your head. We're just talking about natural gas. We're not even getting to what David's talking about as far as hazardous environments. We're not even at that point yet. I'm talking about just the bare bones every day. Who's first in? You know, hazmat comes in later. Who's first in on the call needs to be proficient in how to use a meter. And we're not there as a nation. We are grossly, grossly undertrained in this area. And I think David probably would agree on the hazmat side too. I always say I can do hazmat techs and firefighters in the same class. People are, no, you can't. Hazmat techs are so advanced. You'd be surprised. And that's the best way I can put it.
Yeah.
Go
ahead, Dave.
No,
well, I was going to say, I think a lot of the issues that we deal with is that gas meters, because it falls into the hazmat umbrella, it tends to kind of go, as most things with hazmat in the fire services, it's not very sexy, or people look at it as this is just some really dorky stuff or whatever. And they don't realize that these are some of the most catastrophic calls that we can run with almost no warning other than our meter, what our meter's telling us. And I don't know how many people I've talked to before who, you know, kind of like what Dave was saying about 10% LEL being the NIOSH IDLH and whatnot for, anything that's flammable or anything whose primary hazard is flammability. But ultimately, there are tons of people who they don't know that. They just say, if the meter beeps at me, then I go back outside or whatever. And I call for somebody else. And we have to have a higher understanding of what we're dealing with. Because, you know, your meter, ultimately, when it comes down to it, your meter is a dumb device. It's a tool. It's just like a Halligan. You know, I could hand somebody a Halligan and tell them, hey, can you use this? And they either can or they can't. Ultimately, it's up to the user to be able to use it smartly and be able to open a door, be able to, you know, force whatever they need to force.
I'm going to put my fire chief hat on just for a second and say, if I issue a piece of equipment to an engine company, they better know how it works and they better be able to use it. That goes back to an organizational problem and not so much as a cultural problem, is that when people are issued pieces of equipment, and this is what Scott's point is that this has become prevalent in most metro departments, they're going to have four gas meters on their engine company just for CO calls. They want to have an electrochemical cell as part of those four gas. That they, in natural gas calls, they pulling it out for an LEL detector is pretty smart practice. However, we all know that they're going to be getting the natural gas cars, the odorant is going to be so low that four gas meter will never work. So the PID being part of that four gas meter, a photoionization detector that can pick up other things that aren't flammable, things that ionization potential is less than that. So there's a training curve of what a four gas meter is. But I'm passionate about what the current environment is, making sure that whatever four gas meter that you're using, your base technology has to have a catalytic bead, Wheatstone bridge, LEL detector, so it can find all flammable atmospheres before they can become 100% of the LEL.
Right.
With that said, how does a four gas meter work, and what do those readings actually mean? So what is the technology behind it?
You want me to go first on that one? I'll jump in on that one first. So like David was saying before, you know, we have electrochemical sensors out there, like your O2, your H2S, HCN, a couple of other ones out there. That technology is pretty straightforward the way that's designed. They pretty much all operate exactly the same based off filters and algorithms to say what amounts are there on the call for the most part. Those sensors are pretty much the same across the board, believe it or not. But then we go in the LEL sensors, and that's really where I think this discussion needs to go in this podcast today, is there are so many different sensors out there now, and companies are buying them without understanding the technology they got in their hand. And David hit it right on the money. That catalytic bead sees all flammable gases. When you buy these other technologies, you don't see all flammable gases. And if you're first in, or you're a hazmat team first in, I think you want to see all flammable gases. That would be my thing, you know, because there's so many different varieties out there. We got the catalytic bead, we got the thermal conductivity, we got the MOX sensor, we got the MPS sensor, and the IR, and they all have different versions. I mean, they all have a different mission, I guess is the best way to put it. And who do you want to bring to battle when you're first in on the battlefield? I want the weapon that can see the most of the enemy, not the least of the enemy. That's how I kind of look at it.
Yeah, I agree. Okay.
Tyler, go ahead please.
I was just going to add to that. I agree about the cat bead. It's one of these technologies that's been around for a long time. If it burns, it will pick it up. And that's something that's really good to know. And that's actually something that I talked to our team and our recruits about back home, is ultimately, you know, you never want to just put your faith in one sensor or anything like that, or one meter. You want to have complementary sensors if you can, but I do like the robustness of the catalytic bead, how essentially if it burns, you're able to pick up anything, or if it burns, you're able to get some type of readings on it, some type of measurable readings.
Yeah, a great example is that in March of 2024, from a part of that Jackrabbit program, we were able to get into a testing chamber with ammonia. And we did have some NDIR LAL detectors, and we had the catalytic bead detectors. And needless to say, because of how they work, the infrared detector had zero chance of finding ammonia in a flammable atmosphere. Yeah. What was amazing, you talk about robustness, Tyler, is that they were able to repeatedly get really accurate readings down around 1500 parts per million, which is 1% of the LEL of ammonia. Right. They were able to get that. Now, sometimes it took up to 4% before we get a pick it up and before, but the repeatability was outstanding. And yeah, robustness is what I love about them. That I will tell you that, you know, all the meters that we used in that chamber are now dead. So just like everything else that you expose it to, what it's meant to be able to do. But buying a class one, division one, group A, B, C, D monitor that is intrinsically safe is the foundational response four gas meter LEL detector that you have to have.
Oh, Dave, you just hit that right on the money there. The intrinsically safe part cracks me up. People go, my meter's intrinsically safe. And I go, oh, okay, let's flip it over and look and see what it is. And you'd be amazed at how many people have meters in their hands that are not intrinsically safe in an acetylene atmosphere. You know what I mean? As far as A, B, they're only like a C or D. They're not A and B. And to be able to sell those meters online, I don't want to get into sales, but you know, we need to make people educated so they know what we need to make people inform consumers of the meter market is what we have to do, and figure out which meter is best for their mission. And we're all hitting on that right now. But the one question I always ask people is, what LEL sensor do you have in your meter? And what do you think they tell me? What do you think the answer is? I don't know. I have an LEL sensor. Yeah. They have no idea what they have. And then my favorite one is one I always ask is, what is your meter reading when you get to 100% of the LEL? 99.99% of the time, what do you think the answer is? My most feared words in first response industry, I don't know.
Yep.
That scares the living hell out of me. Every class we go to, every place we teach, whether it's a conference or firehouse, volunteer, career, it does not matter. The answers are exactly the same. We are so deficient and making sure we're safe until, you know, and then somebody blows up and then we start looking at it. And then we, of course, then we whitewash the report so we don't get down to the facts of the root cause. But that's a whole nother issue another day.
Yeah. But actually, you bring up a really good point, or two good points. First off, for our listeners, what does A, B, and C, D refer to with intrinsically safe?
That's brings me to a great story, Dave, is A, it happens to be acetylene. And I had purchased a BCD monitor. Class one means it does flammable atmospheres and vapors. Class two, you're doing dust. So yeah, you'd need a class one. Division one, yeah, it needs to go into a flammable atmosphere and be intrinsically safe. But the ABCD, A is acetylene. And I exposed acetylene. Well, I'll be honest, it wasn't me. It was a good friend of mine, because I wasn't there. I would have never have done it. And it ruined me.
I would have done that.
Actually had some internal combustion happen.
Wow.
Because of that triple bond that's in acetylene. The double bonded compounds like B for butadiene, other double bonded compounds, that's the B. The C are oxygen agent compounds, and then to regular propane and natural gas. So there are UL listings for that, so the meter you can use them. So it's hard to think in the environment of the folks that are selling detectors in today's world that you could find a detector that's not a class one, division one, group A, B, C, D monitor for hazardous materials response.
But they're out there and they're on rigs and it's scary.
Yep.
I mean, if you're first in on a call, you definitely could be running into an acetylene call. And I not to have a class one A, B, C, D is just, it just baffles me. But once again, the consumer who is the first responder has no idea what we're talking about right now. None.
And Scott, you brought up, you know, what does your LEL sensor read when you're 100% of the LEL? What are those sensors reading? What kind of, primarily for the oxygen and the flammability?
Well, the flammability is what I worry about the most. Cause I mean, that's like David said earlier, what's the number one thing that's going to kill me on a call? I could put my mask on and protect myself from CO, H2S and all that stuff. I can't protect myself from LEL. You know what I mean? But so what it reads is it's that every manufacturer has a different reading that comes up on their display. Everybody thinks it's going to say 100. It doesn't do that. When it hits 100, but if it's catalytic bead, it might say, like Industrial Scientific says OR, which means over range. And a lot of responders think it means there's something wrong with the meter and they'll stay there. If you want to read an account, Loudoun County line of duty, that report kind of, it doesn't say that specifically, but if you read it, there it is. There's a couple ones up in Maine that happened as well, but if you go to, I'm going to say Dräger, for instance, I'm going to say names here. There's nothing wrong with mentioning names on these meters, what their display says. It's like this calculus looking hieroglyphics that pops up on the screen when you're at the LEL on a Dräger. I believe Array Systems says over on it. I forget sometimes, you guys, if you guys know, please chime in. I think it says over.
I think it says over. You can see high on
some
on
say certain, high, but here, the point we're making right here is just what I'm saying. I don't need to paint a curb to keep firefighters from tripping over it. What I need them to know when they have a meter in hand, first thing they need to know is what their meter reads when they're in a flammable range. And they don't know that, you know, and we're talking about just 10%. Holy mackerel, what about if they get to 100%? It's scary stuff. And so there's every manufacturer, Dave, has a different display that comes up. However, if you go into the peaks, you can go in and it'll say 100 on it then. And usually that's the max out. It won't say 101, 102 because you're at 100%.
Okay.
But that's the thing about meters that people don't understand. It's in the manuals. It's just, it's buried on like page 67. That's the thing.
And should folks be reading the manuals for their four gas meters?
Excuse
Absolutely.
Me?
Should they be reading their four gas meter manuals?
Absolutely. A lot of the posts I do that on purpose. I say, if you don't know this answer, maybe you should get your manual out today and take a peek at it for training. You know, I tend to put teases out there that way.
And I think something I've talked about a lot to my team is, you know, let's say the RKI Eagles, that's a meter that we have used for years and years and years. And you look at the manual for it and it's something like 250 pages. Well, probably 150, if not more, of those pages are related to optional features that we don't have on there. We didn't purchase them like that. So I tell them, I'm like, hey, you know, you can look at this stuff. And even then, you don't necessarily need to know, you know, how to swap out a sensor unless you're, you know, the sensor geek, the maintenance geek or anything. But you need to know your alarm levels. You need to know what type of sensor you're going to have. You need to know, you know, your stels, you need to know your TWA, stuff like that. Just, I mean, for instance, your short-term exposure limit, maybe not your LEL sensor, but say your CO sensor, you could get a stel alarm and people look at it and they're like, well, what the heck is this? I have no idea what this is. If you read the manual, you'd be able to understand what that is and that you are getting pretty high readings initially. And it's just telling you, hey, you know, you might want to back out of here or whatever. I think it's crucial to understand that stuff and dive into the literature of it.
I would equate it to kind of how you train a first responder. Now, this is, you know, the fire chief hat on, is that they got SCBAs on that rig. They know how to don them and doff them appropriately. Yep. And they practice it and it becomes second nature. So what are my procedures for using the meter? How you need to make sure you can turn it on, make sure you got a good zero, and then you got to bump it before you go in. And that's what you got to get them to practice. I mean, getting them to read a book, we all know that's probably never read a book on the SCBA, but you drill them hard enough on the steps that you have to do to use it. And as you guys know, then we train on it, right? We right. give them a scenario, you cut them loose and let them go. Hey, you've got a report of a natural gas leak inside a building. And they don't take a meter with them. You've got a good trainable moment there for that engine captain to say, not only did you not take it, okay, that's bad enough. But the fact is that if you went in there, now you're looking for your nose to tell you something. That is not how we trained you because your SCBA can't be on, right? So now we. So my point being is that I think that's where you got to get to. Now, Dave forgot in my intro, I am the old guy, right? I've been doing this a long time. So when we say they're not doing it right, Scott, got to point the fingers back at us.
Oh, no, no argument. No argument that it's not a priority in training, Dave. It's not. And it should be.
We've got to find a way to change the paradigm of okay, what do these things do? And then obviously when you buy them, the robustness that Tyler mentioned, I think it's got to be key. We have an environment that's very different from anybody else when they deal with detectors. They're going to have to be ruggedized, or as you know, they're not going to use them. They don't have time to sit and try to pull a meter off that won't quickly zero, you know, and be able to use it at an incident. So I think that is another piece. Most of these detectors aren't built for first responders. They've been built for other folks or during hazardous materials response or industry response. I think there's a real gap there for first responder detectors that got that ruggedized approach to them.
Yeah, I mean, it's huge. The training, you're right. I do point back at me. I tried to do it my whole career in Baltimore County. I mean, I emphasize it, but the problem is my upper echelon, my chiefs and stuff were just, it wasn't the focus. It wasn't the flavor of the day, if you know what I mean. You know how, as a chief, you get caught up in those different things in a fire service, what's important and what's not important until something goes wrong. And you know what happens if something goes wrong, then something becomes important again. And I can't emphasize that enough. We are grossly deficient in training. I'm hoping the new 1010, which talks about meter training now, and it finally, you know, in the new NFPA 1010, that's going to be a help to spark this, you know, spark. But is it just going to be somebody at their firehouse, David, talking about that meter for 10 minutes and saying, okay, we checked the box, you know, in firefighter class? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. You know, it just, we got to get better somehow, find a way.
And where would folks go to get additional information and training? Any place you could recommend?
Well, I recommend my business, but I don't want to tell my business on it. that's what we're there for. You know, we created this business came. I mean, my meter business came, honestly, when I retired. I said, I'm tired of watching calls. And David knows what I'm talking about, where a guy comes out of the building when I get there and hands me a meter and says, here, it's alarming. And I'm like, well, what was alarming? I don't know, because by that time, the meter's cleared. So then I have to go to the peaks and say, holy crap, Batman, you were 30% LEL in that building, an apartment building. You haven't started evacuating it yet? We got a problem. Because they don't know if it alarmed for CO. They don't know alarm for LEL or O2. And I saw this over and over in my career. But like you said in my introduction, you know, deploying so much, I couldn't do anything about it. So I made it a mantra that when I retired, going to create this business, and I am going to go out there with whoever works for me, Tyler being one of them. And it's a great addition to our team. Is I'm going to make a difference one responder at a time. And eventually that piggy bank's going to fill up. And eventually that one person tells 10 people, 10, it's the old shampoo commercial. Remember the Suave commercial from the 70s? Yeah. Now you tell one person, I'll tell 10, 100. That's my goal. It's a piggy bank effect. I'm not trying to get it all at once. I can't eat the whole sandwich at once, but I am going to chew on this crap sandwich until the day I die. And that's my goal. And whether it be volunteer, career, you know, I'm trying to take care of the whole spectrum of first responders and hazmat technicians out there. And David, as you know, that's a gigantic population to try to hit, especially when it rotates and switches over every couple of years. You know, that's even makes it even harder to reach out there. So that would be my pitch.
Yeah. You also have the consortium classes. Yes. So you have CDP down in Anniston. They do hazmat technologies class. I've taken that. You get your hands on the stuff. They go into a little bit of meter theory and whatnot. I think one of the top classes, and I know David knows what I'm going to say, is the advanced science of hazmat class at the NFA. That was the first class I ever took at the NFA, and that really got me interested in learning the nuances of metering technology. I mean, far beyond, you know, just LEL and electro or catalytic bead and electrochemical sensors. It takes a deep dive into everything, how to use them, the science behind they work, behind how they work, and how to interpret them and stuff like that. And not to mention, I mean, those two sources, those two resources, they're free. You know, they're DHS funded.
And so how do we plant those options. Seeds? You guys are running the money. How do we plant those seeds in every department across the country? Not one person that's going to step up and say, all right, I'm going to make sure my people understand these meters, because you can't hit them all at once. But how do we plant those seeds? Whether it's through an NFA class, through an online thing, through books. I mean, there's numerous books out there. I mean, I got this one book called Hazardous Gas Monitors by Jack Chow, as an industry guy. You want to learn about meters, that guy just is great. That textbook is awesome. And you got Chris Hawley's book. And then like Industrial Scientific, they got their, what is it? Gas Detection Made Easy book. It's just 100 pages of simple stuff that if somebody would take the time to page through, they'd be a better responder. But like David said, how do you get them to read? That's a hard thing to get firefighters to do. They want to do, they don't want to read. And, you know, how do we get through that?
Yeah. DHS, S&T, Science and Technology, they do a SAVER program that they actually get responders, us, to test the equipment, rate it, and then they give a rating for different detectors. You're getting ready to buy a detector, I would highly recommend taking a look at the SAVER program, whether it's a four-gas meter, whether it's more other advanced technologies, or you're buying a drone. Now you've got responders actually testing it to what they like about it, what they don't like about it. But ground truth for all of us for this webinar is that, or this podcast, is to make sure that those folks that are assigned, an engine company got a meter, they got to know how it works. And the danger of having LEL detectors without the right detector, the technology behind it, it needs to be stressed to say, yeah, if it's looking for natural gas or propane, it happens to be an infrared detector, I'd be pretty confident that it's going to find propane or natural gas, because that's what they've tuned it for. And you can say that same thing for an MOS detector. The problem is, it's going back to our original discussion. Now, when you're going to buy a meter, what are you buying it for? And if it's going to be an all hazards environment, you're out to protect yourself from, you better make sure you have the right kind of detection technology inside that meter.
David, that study, or that website you were talking about, is called SAVER. Can you spell that out?
So now you catch me on a DHS acronym. You can Google it real quick, but it really is just a program that they've been using now for 2016 is the last time that they did four gas meters. So
it needs an update, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I'm going to let Andy Byrne, since he's right there, he's going to bail me out, as Andy always does. He's looking up the acronym for me now. I know that the DHS SAVER program does allow you, once again, to do a lot of stuff outside of hazmat technologies. But while Andy's looking that for me, I would say that, you know, he brought up 470, Scott, and they don't even call it a CGI in 470. They call it a flammable gas indicator. That's FGI. Now, you can't find an FGI for sale, but it is kind of a misnomer that it doesn't do combustible gas indicator. It really does flammable gas indicator. And so, like, you can start to see within our own industry, the folks that are geeks, we still struggle to find out a common terminology of what we're going to talk each one of those.
I didn't want to put you on the spot there, but being in the military for so long, acronyms drove me crazy. And if I didn't know one, I had to ask. I never just nodded my head and said, okay, because that could get you in a world of hurt somewhere downrange. So I always, when I don't know an acronym, that's one thing about me. I will always ask that question. And I encourage all first responders to do the same thing. If somebody says something to you, you don't understand, stop the conversation and say, hey, I had a colonel years ago say, can you explain that to me better? It makes a difference. It really does. I think it brings a lot of clarity to things when people are confused. So I didn't mean to put you on the spot there. I apologize.
No, I'm on the spot as special systems assessment and validation for emergency responders. Is safe.
Boy, Andy just texted to you. Andy texted.
For emergency responders. Now, if you want to know what NUTSL stands for, I can give you that as well. But it goes back to, I think it's a great resource for folks that are looking at buying new technologies, what technologies they've got. However, I would say that within our network, probably the most important thing we've always done is talk to other departments. What do you have? What do you use? And why do you like it? Don't forget, that's one of the reasons that you go to training with that's outside of your jurisdiction, so you see what other jurisdictions are doing.
Right.
I think that's probably more important than anything else, is just finding out who has that instrument and who likes it or doesn't like it for whatever reasons those might be.
That was that you just said right there was so funny. I was somewhere the other week. I can't remember where I was. I think I was in Georgia somewhere training. And I had a person come up to me and say, the reason why you're here is because we don't believe in ancestral training. I think I was in Tennessee, Tyler. He said that to him. Said, we don't believe in ancestral training. I had to take a step back on that for a minute and try to understand what he was telling me. And then I realized what he was telling me. When you only train within your department, you're never going to get any. You're not going to get much better because you're not getting different experiences, different points of view, you know, different education and training, knowledge, skills, the whole thing. It really does put you, you're really pigeonholing yourself in the future, probably LOD, you know, or something like that, because you're not, you don't know what's going on.
Yeah. One other resource I wanted to add, and I guess this is a shameless plug for the IAB, is our detection and decon subgroup. It's myself and about half a dozen other folks. We actually created a document back in 2024, kind of fall of 2024. You can find it on the IAB's website, but it's the Fire and Emergency Services Multi-Gas Detector Evaluation Guidance Document. And it basically does exactly what we've been talking about. It gives you considerations to think of whenever you're about to purchase something. So it talks about, hey, before you purchase this, make sure that you understand what sensor technology it has. It even has stuff like intrinsic safety that we were talking about. It even goes down to, you know, can you press the buttons in structural turnout gloves and stuff like that? Because that's something to consider as well. So I don't know if you'd be able to link that when you post the podcast or anything, Dave, but that's a resource that we have out there that's for free. And that was the goal of that document, was to give folks an idea of what they're about to get themselves into, because once you purchase a meter that's $2,000, you know, you're not just going to get it and within 30 days be like, I'm just going to send it back or whatever, or I don't like this. So we invite people to do their due diligence before they make that purchase and make sure that they kind of run it through its paces and whatnot. And I agree with what you guys are saying about asking other departments what's going on, because I mean, just like all you guys teaching at different departments, nobody is gonna, or no single county even is gonna be all RAES or all Blackline or all RKI or all Industrial Scientific. It's gonna be department dependent. You never know, you know, what the reasonings are. It could have been the cost, or it could have been, hey, I went to Advanced Science, I went to the CDP, I had a class with the meter guys and they influenced me to get this or whatever.
Or are you ready for this one? It's the way we've always done it.
Oh yeah. That's the most common one. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to support that, Tyler. I mean, the IAB did some really good work on using four gas meters for post-fire environments.
And oh yeah.
It's really very important that, you know, what's his, oh, it, well, I can take my SCBA off. Well, no, you can't.
No.
And the science behind how the instrument works. So the IAB is an excellent resource. And once again, going back to what you want to be able to do with this podcast is that, you know, if you got a four gas meter, understand what the technology is behind your meter, so you're using it appropriately, just like any other tool that's in your toolbox.
And we will add links to the IAB and National Fire Academy and CDP and everybody else that you mentioned.
I'll forward you the saver document as well on four gas meters, even though it's a little dated, it's 10 years old.
Yeah.
Okay. So one thing I wanted to mention was there, it was, you talk about what's the consequence of the technology, not knowing it. And I was thinking about it last night and I came up with the one sentence on that. The meter may not be able to see the gas on the call you're on. That to me is the consequence of not knowing your sensor technology. And, you know, we talk about all hazards. It's all we preach in the, you know, FEMA directory, everything, all hazards. And we got to be ready for the bad guys. They're here. You can't keep playing the natural gas propane game. That's not going to cut it when the bad guys finally let loose. And it's not if, it's when. And you guys all know that. You've been around long enough. You know, when's the next one coming? How are they going to come after us? How are they going to come after you as a first responder? I know your weaknesses in meter technology. I can beat you very easily. If I know it, there's some smarter people than me out there that are bad guys that know it as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, in the interest of time, do you guys have any last words of wisdom?
Oxygen sensor.
I'm gonna say the fact with being able to work with you, Dave, your expertise when it came to building programs, the advanced science courses, you and Wayne Yoder's vision, and having that curriculum, it gives us a chance to be looking at technologies every chance they come out. And Andy Burns is here for a reason. I don't think he should be able to get away without at least saying a little bit, but his ability to coordinate that data gathering effort. And we try to do it every 2 to 3 years because technologies come out that are different. And we're behind the curve in the advanced science course, just with that, knowing with, you know, there are the technologies out there and how they're going to be applied. So it's my last chance to see if Andy's actually online and he is listening to us, but wants to talk a little bit about the development and doing that data gathering, why it's so important that responders work with manufacturers of equipment so we can get the tools that we need.
Well, I'll give you a hint on how to get on a podcast. You just invite yourself. I have to apologize. I thought this was a live one, but either way, since I'm here and since you brought it up, Dave, yes, the advanced science course looks at all of these varying technologies. We don't look at devices, we look at technologies, and many devices have similar technologies, but they do work differently. Not every four gas is like every other four gas. PIDs are different, bulb length, the track of the gas, all of that stuff makes such a difference. And that's why classes like the advanced science class are so important when it comes to metering and detection. It's not just talking about a particular device that might be the hot lick at the time, but actually talking about the technology, and that's the value of advanced science. So yeah, thanks.
Scott or Tyler, you got anything else for us?
We talked about the LEL sensor a lot today, because obviously we think that's probably the one that's going to cause the most angst when it's game time, because it's all over the place right now. But the other one is the oxygen sensor. And we talk about, like Dave said earlier, the NIOSH level for LEL for us, IDLH, is 10% of the LEL. So when I talk about oxygen, you know, we talk about oxygen. What's our alarm on the meter for oxygen? And it's 19.5%. Everybody agree with that? That's what it's set at factory industry-wide. For the fire service, that's the wrong level. That's the wrong number. And guys are responding and gals are responding to an alarm, not a reading. And anytime that oxygen sensor shifts, the people that are listening to this podcast today, if anything, put your mask on as soon as the oxygen level shifts on your meter, because that means there's a lot of crap in the air. A minimum, probably 10,000 parts per million of something else you're sucking in at this moment. And hey, it may not hit you tomorrow, but 20 years from now, when you're sitting in that chemo chair, that's where it's going to come get you. And I think that's one thing. We talk about the LEL, trying to get people to understand it. We really need to push the oxygen sensor as well and not have people fall into the trap of the 19.5% oxygen. I think that's a trap for the fire service. I know what the intent is of OSHA and the NIOSH stuff. I understand the intent, but I truly believe it's a trap for the fire service and why our health is where it is today, especially with new construction and the products. We got to be better. We got to be smarter. And we got to get it out there and let people know that.
Yeah. I would just say, as far as final words go, just do your due diligence. Everything about this job, everything about being a first responder, it's a blessing to be able to do what we do. And a lot of people take it for granted because they get burnout from med calls or, you know, the same old gas leaks and stuff like that. But it's when you get complacent, that's when things go south. Read the manuals on a rainy day. You know, take the classes, get outside your bubble, because otherwise, you know, you don't want to end up a line of duty death simply because you didn't put the effort into being better at this craft. That's the final piece of advice I give.
Well, thank you all very much for your time. And Andy, thanks for sneaking in and bailing Dave out with Saver. and as I said, we'll have everything links posted at the end of this podcast. And thank you all.
Thank you, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.